Would you like to know more? Would you like to know more?
Welcome to War Master Podcast, episode 189 with Paul and, well, remotely Paul and Barry. A little bit of an unusual episode this week, month, year, whatever, in that we had to record separately. Sad times, because Paul's a little bit busy and a little bit busy in the evenings as well. So it was quite difficult to find a time without too much time passing from the try-with. So trying something new. He's recorded his sections, I'm recording my sections. We're going to Frankenstein them together. It's probably not going to be that great. It's probably not going to be that long. But it does give you a feel of the event. And because we didn't travel in the same car, which is normally how we'd record it, we had to find another way of doing it. This will be a one-off. Hopefully we don't want to have to do something like this again. Anyway, so today's topic, episode 189, is the Tri-Wiz Warmaster Melee 2. Which is the 2024 edition of the Tri-Wiz event, held in Saffron Walden a week and a bit ago now. So if today's the 25th, that means the 23rd. So it means it was the 16th, Saturday, the 16th of March, 2024. 24 players. I will explain a little bit about the event and my list and stuff. And then I'll go through the individual games, and then we'll talk about we'll do a wrap-up, and Paul will do the same. So it's three mixed doubles games at 1,250 points. I took Nippon because I think they're a little bit ahead of the curve as far as power level goes. Or certainly, well, maybe they're not the best in the game, but they're certainly pretty near the top. And I wanted to exploit what I thought was the best stuff they had. So they have Saurus, and they cost a little bit more. They cost 80 points, but they don't have the 20 centimeter command rule, which is a big deal, because that really hampers the Lizardmen army, because they just can't get anywhere very quickly. So you don't have that. You pay 5 points more, but what you do get is two extra rules. One of them is that you can't evade. Well, stuff like Saurus ain't evading anything. What the fuck are they evading with for base attacks? So they can't evade. I don't see that as a big deal. They get one less dice on dry packs, which actually came up more than I expected, because people do have little token amounts of shooting, or even if they have cannons and stuff. And the one less dice for dry pack did come in quite a few times, actually, more than I expected. It's on the Saurus, on the Samurai Foot, and the Samurai Horse. And that's basically all I took. So my list was one Ashigaru, which is like halberdier. I had to take it, just hit it at the back, not interested. I had eight samurai, I had three samurai horse, who are boar boys, with the samurai special rule that we've discussed, that they they get driven back one less dice, and they can't initiative evade. I guess there is an option for these to initiative evade if they're really dinged up and they're fighting, they're a bit overmatched cavalry-wise, but I didn't do it. They even charged elephants, so... And then we have our character package, which was you have to have a general. So we had a general. We had to have a runesmith. And that left us 20 points for a dispel scroll. So basically my list was three brigades, a combat brigade of three cavalry, two combat brigades of four samurai, an Ashigaru hiding at the back, a shogun, and a runesmith with a dispel scroll. Because how the magic works, or the anti-magic works, is you get a four up to get rid of anything within 50 centimetres of your runesmith. And then if that misses, then you've got your dispel scroll. Or if somebody tries to ring of power it through, you've got your dispel scroll. But whatever. At the end of the day, you should, for what is 110 points, you get a guy that can command as well as a hero and shuts down most magic in most games. And being Nippon, they also get an extra plus one to break, which is very strong. Which there is a minus in the fact that heroes and runesmiths, when they blunder, you put a minus one on the dice, so they can't do the "we're going to charge" bit. they get the minus one to command twice as often, so one third of the time. And if there's a samurai in the brigade that fails the order, blunders the order, they have to take the minus one to command. So there is a negative there. I'm not sure it covers the entire cost of the free extra point of break. And how the Warmaster melee worked was that the you added together your units. So if I had, how many units did I have there? I think it was 12. So if I have 12 and the other guy has 12, we add it together. So that's 24, half it, that's 12. So if it was 23, it would still be 12. 24 is 12. You don't take your individual half rounded up. You kind of round up the whole, or round down the whole. And so my extra nip on break added onto that, the team total, which was cool. Right, so that was the setup, and then I will talk about the individual games.
Okay, so I am recording my first bit of this segment, which is entitled List and Try Wiz Overview. So here we go. Okay, listeners, so my list that I took to the Warmaster Melee 2 was as followed. It was Dark Elves, and it was the same list that had won the event last year. And that was 2 Spearmen, 1 Crossbowman, 2 Dark Riders, 3 Cold One Knights, 1 Harpy, a General who has a Sword of Fate to make up 5 points, a Hero with a Manticore, a Sword of Might to make up points, and a Sorceress. So that gave me a total units of 9 and a break point of 5 individually. And that was my list. It's not bad list by any means, of course. Obviously, it won the event in Predecessor. And, you know, it's all about using the Command 10 General to fire the Cold One Knights into things. That does the heavy lifting. The Spearmen and the Crossbowmen are the mandatory infantry that I'm taking, you know, would make use of scenery and, like, gameplay. And the Dark Riders are there because you can't take any more Cold One Knights because they have a min-max of 3. So that's my 3 Cold One Knights done. And the Dark Riders, but together, the Dark Riders can put out a total of 12 shots when it gets into close range, which is not insignificant, and can be pretty effective units as well. Harpies are there simply for toolbox. I'm pretty happy with the list. I don't think I would change anything in it. I think it's solid, and obviously it can do everything. It can't fight everything, but it can do mostly what I need it to do, and it's got a good track record. As for Triwiz Overview, that was 3 games where you mixed with partners. So you would turn up and be randomly paired with a partner, and that would happen 3 times. And together you would have a combined break. So that was that threw me a little. I don't know if they'd changed that from last time. So you added all the units you had together, and that gave you a total break, then a break value of your 1 army. So I would be adding 9 to the 9 to my team. So actually where you take extra unit to get that break normally, that kind of works less in this team environment. The tables were set like one, you know, like with the scenery laid out. The scenery wasn't the same in every table. I mean, the walkthrough of what the scenery was on the table, and I'll speak about how impactful the scenery was in one of the games later. And 3 rounds played, awards and curry afterwards. Pretty standard stuff. Ain't broke, don't fix it. Okay, so my game 1 was as follows. I was partnered up with John, who is of John of Cromarty Forge, so the guy that does that company. And my Dark Elves were partnered up with his Lizardmen, and he'd gone for a all infantry is Lizardmen list, so it had lots of Asaurus, 2 units of Croxagor, a Stegodon, a lovely painted stuff of his own models as well. And we partnered up, and we had a standard, you know, it was a standard battlefield game. The scenery for this game was quite mixed. It had like woods and hills, you know, like it was, you know, a decent range and a mixture, and then some impassable stuff. And we were up against a Chaos player and a Witch Hunter player, and their combined break was much bigger than ours. And actually they could have what they should have done essentially was they could have lost every single Chaos unit and still hell be in the game because the break was bigger than the units and the Chaos army. So I was like, that's, yeah, well, talking to John about it, I was like, that is how we can lose this game, if they send the Chaos straight at us and we have to fight our way through that rather than like weak Witch Hunters. The Witch Hunters hold the break, because in this rule set, if either of them lost a general, they would lose the game, but most games were going to finish by, you know, their combined break worked out. Anyway, So I was quite cagey with my stuff, you know, in terms of like, right, you know, seeing how we can like work out how to best to attack these two. The Witch Hunters did have a unit of cannons, and we didn't have, we were looking at like which of our combined units is best to be shot at. And I was like, and we realized that the Stegodon would have been the best thing to have take got being shot at by a unit of cannons. But it ended up being like sacrifice some skinks. So John spent quite a bit of time, quite a few turns trying to get through a wood that was he deployed behind, like bring himself forward. While I did a redeploy, my infantry took a a bit of a wood that was, you know, going to be threatened mostly by that unit of Empire Witch Hunter Pistoliers and two units of Chaos Knights, so they wouldn't be able to interact with that. You know, I could slow them down. And my original plan was then to redeploy my Cold Ones and my Dark Riders round to our left flank, which would go behind this wood that the Lizardman, like my Lizardman partner, was going through, and like put pressure based on the Witch Hunter. So we would kill the Witch Hunter units first rather than the Chaos Army. Anyway, essentially, that didn't happen that well. A lot of failed command dice were made, so my Cold One Knights never got round to that flank and actually ended up coming back right again. My Dark Riders did manage a circle round, but they didn't contribute that much, really. So overall, we managed to delay the Chaos Play, especially the Chaos Knights with like carefully used magic, like stopping them from charging, which was pretty baller. My infantry did a good job of slowing everything down because, you know, the cavalry just weren't headed near a wood that infantry were in and they couldn't do anything about it. And they didn't, you know, they bring up their infantry like, you know, as a second afterthought. But I have to say, like, the John, my, you know, Lizardman player, like his Lizardman came stomping through, and then it resulted in a mass combat being fought on a hill against a lot of Chaos troops and then, you know, Witch Hunters into it. He managed to, you know, get his orders going. So I think he'd done like certainly a second order and maybe a third order rolls on things to get them into charge distance and like attacking. And he won, and eventually the game was told by the Chaos player, put his Chaos Dragon into a unit of Chaos Warriors that was attacked on this hill, and they were beat out, they were killed, they fluffed some dice, and that unit died, and that general died, and then with his King is Dead rule, the wizard tried to step up to be the general, failed that command check, and that was a game over. But we were ahead on break, we probably were going to win anyway, so it made the game end abruptly by a death of a general on that side. That was one of the ways it could be done. But yeah, I mean, I barely did anything. I think I lost a stand of, you know, my infantry. I think I took one or two units out overall. I barely did anything. But we got the 16-0, which was we'd broken opponents and they'd scored so little against us. They were below the 250-point threshold, so they got nothing. And that was the end of game one. I get a 16-0, so you can't get a stronger start.
Game one, I was drawn with Janas. Janas was playing... he was playing Kislev, but he'd gone Horse Archer mad and Banner mad. You'd have to ask him if you can find him on Facebook, because I didn't get a copy of his list. But I think he had seven lots of Horse Archers, and he may have had the other guys, the Winged Lancers as well. And he had at least three banners spread through the cavalry army. His army was basically all cavalry. So he had those 10 units of cavalry, or whatever the minimum infantry was, and a character pack. And we played, so me and Janas played against two Chaos Dwarf players, Sam and Dave. Very different builds. Sam and Dave sounds like a band, doesn't it? That's Chaz and Dave, maybe. Very different builds. One was quite cavalry heavy or hobgoblin heavy. It's probably from when the old silly light cavalry exploit existed that you couldn't pursue them, so people went El Notso on light cav, but that those days are gone, thank Christ. And the other one was a more normal build, it's quite heavy, so black orcs, blunderbuss, who are very good now. I do like that profile. It might be a bit undercosted, if I'm being honest, but it does an half pack a punch. So you've got the blunderbuss and you've got some Chaos Dwarfs behind that in a brigade, and then you've got a full artillery brigade, because at this point in time, Chaos Dwarfs are still able to put out the equivalent of a full artillery brigade, even at 1,000 points, because they can have one of each of their artillery. Not that it did him much good, because the Earthshaker is the one with a... Death Rocket is the one with a random... amount of shots. So it rolled a one for its first shot and then another one and blew itself up. So that's not great. And then you're down to one piece of artillery, which doesn't do enough to do anything, really. The game was a bit weird in that Janus and Sam were battering the living shit out of each other. And I was going forward and Dave couldn't get anything going at all. I mean, literally, I don't think he passed more than one order in the first three turns. And Janus had nearly finished the game. So I think turn three, I managed to get my samurai horse in and some samurai into the blunderbuss and the black orcs, and the samurai horse went over the hill and got stuck into the chaos dwarfs, the other chaos dwarfs, the hobgoblin riders. And that was that. I mean, it was quite a quick win, really. I don't think it wasn't a long game at all. We scored 16 points. Because what you do is the winner gets 16 points, then the loser gets stuff based on how many points they killed. So Janna's lost 620 points. That's how aggressive he was being. I lost 160. Dave lost 550. Sam lost 250. We got 16 points, which I think it was a fucking crazy scoring system. I think basically what happened is me and Janna's got 8 points each or something of the 16 points, and Sam and Dave shared the 8 points. It was a really good game, and I was amazed to see two Chaos Dwarves. I mean, there were 24 armies, though, 24 players, maybe not 24 different armies. It was just amazing that the first game was me and Janus. I mean, if you're going to pick a partner to play with, I would pick Janus. And, play against Chaos Dwarves. So, game one, win.
Okay, so my game two is as follows. I was partnered up with a guy called David, who had a interesting Chaos Dwarf build where he had gone for 6 Wolf Riders amongst everything and 2 Bull Centers and then minimum infantry and characters. And we were playing against a combination of an Araby army and a Wood Elf army. This is a case of where the table really matters. So we're playing lengthways, which is quite a simple enough scenario, just, you know, instead of where the table's set up. And the table we had a large amount of cavalry, so 6 Wolf Riders, 2 Bull Centers, that's 8, 3 Dark Riders, 9, 10, 11, and 2 Cold Ones, 3 Cold Ones, and then 2 Dark Riders, so that's 13 units of cavalry, while our opponents only had 2 units of 2 units of cavalry in 2 units of desert camels. So we vastly overpowered them in cavalry, and there wasn't anything on this table where the cavalry couldn't go. There was a few bit. There was 1, 2, 3, 4 bits of impassable terrain, but the rest of it was made up of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 area towns. So where anything can enter said town, but only infantry can get defended on them. Anyway, what it meant was, is there was nowhere for cavalry that couldn't really go. And that was critical, basically, because they had a largely infantry force, but it had nowhere where it could go where cavalry couldn't get at it. Quite a bit of persuasion, I said, like, right, this is how we're going to tackle this. I set up on our left-hand side, and the Chaos Dwarf player, David, was on the right, and I instructed him, like, to flank round with his cavalry and to come, like, so go behind mine and come and support, you know, our thrust on our left, because that would then turn make the stuff that was on our opponent's extreme left would be left useless. So, like, in terms of have to be chasing us. Well, we're moving 30, it's moving mostly 20. That's, we can force that in. And that's essentially what did happen, is my Cold One Knights, last game where I didn't really do much at all and took the credit for the win. In this one, my Cold One Knights led the charge, and they charged into, you know, one of the brigades of Wood Elves and just evaporated it, you know, like, because I put 3 units of heavy cavalry into essentially archers and then dryads, so they would evaporate that. My infantry came up supporting it. There was some delaying tactics. They used the combination of a unit of Araby carpets and Wood Elf Warhawk Riders well, because then they matched them together and they could land behind our lines and actually do something with their shooting. I mean, Araby especially, the carpet riders with a wizard who's a Jijin can add, like, more shooting attacks. It's like, that ain't a joke, there's a lot of shooting. But we managed to shoot, but despite all their their firepower, they're not immune to being fired at back. And we did, my Dark Riders did a good job of that, of shooting back at them and causing wounds. They originally jumped over like to tackle my harpies, and you know, which they certainly did, but we could counter that. So essentially this game was a rolling left, like continual left hook by us, you know, where our cavalry just kept like charging everything that it could. And the, you know, infantry defended is no joke, but it would have been so much stronger if there were some woods on the table, where that would have made it a lot harder for us, because we had minimal infantry in my three units and the Kaelstorf's two units. So we would have been trying to dig in whatever we could out with a unit of Kaelstorf warriors, and that would have been it. Anyway, we kept rolling up the flank. This was going to time, but we just about finished it. We just about finished at the end, where we broke them with literally some of the last rolls of dice before time was called, and that meant that we won our second game 16-0 as well, because sadly they hadn't managed to do enough to us to get a score, which was, felt bad for them. But here was a cable of the table totally played in our favour and played, you know, against our opponents. And how crucial is that?
So one thing I didn't say is game one was just a standard kind of pitch battle-y thing. And game two, I was playing with John Braisby, Mr. Cromarty Forge, and he was playing Lizard Men's, and he went heavy as well. So he had a Steggy, two Crocs of Gore, maybe four Saurus, Carnosaur, obviously. Saurus on Carnosaur. Couple of heroes, one wizard, because we only had one, plus the big frog. It was a really small break. Maybe, oh my god, I don't think he maybe had nine, no cold ones either. So all that, I mean, just goes to show you, because I think cold ones are like hands down the best cavalry in the game, but couldn't even find any points for them because he went so infantry heavy. So is that a sign that cavalry are being underutilized? I don't know, because Janna's had a whole army of cavalry and nothing else. So maybe we're just in a place where you can go, you can have it your own way, as Burger King say. You want it your way, you got it. So I was Nippon, obviously, John was Lizards, and we were playing Jeff and his Gobblins. He does love a good Gobblin. And the trolls now are fantastic. I mean, the change to trolls have made them from unusable, because I just couldn't get my head around ever trying to. I've got shit leadership, and I've got a negative to leadership to try and get these fucking trolls to move. So now you can give them two orders effectively normally, because the first order, there's nothing, which is normal. And the second order, as long as you keep them within 20, that's normal as well. It's just minus one. So in the olden days, they were fucking impossible to order. And now, as long as you do it sensibly and you're only trying to do a couple of orders, no problem. Trolls are just good, is what I would say. Trolls are good. And they're certainly the backbone of the Gobblin army now. He did have a little bit of artillery, lots of normal goblin shenaniganry, like wolf riders and wyverns and pump wagons and all the kind of nonsense you find in a goblin list, all the good fun. And we also had James B playing Skaven. And he had a massive Skaven army, absolutely enormous. He had a hero, I think, did he have a hero and a general? He must have had two. He must have been a hero and a general. And that was it. And everything else was just fucking meat. So he had that's a lot of meat in it. So it's probably like 1,050 points of rats. And the rats have a discount of 5 points, generally speaking, on their infantry, so that is a whole lot of rats. And how the game worked out, this one in particular, is we played lengthways, but we still had 80 centimetres between us to start. So I'm not really sure what the point of that was, apart from the fact that you're now sitting next to, on the long side, one of your opponents, which kind of is a bit of an icebreaker, because you're playing lengthways, so your team partner is sat opposite the table to you on one end. So that was quite interesting, I guess. But the actual mechanics of the game made it that because you were playing lengthways and you only had the normal distance between you, it's a metre between you, isn't it? Not 8 centimetres. It was like playing on a 4x4. He just shrunk the table down. So it was interesting. It was, again, just like a kind of pitch battle event, but with a different way of playing, lengthways. The game, John ended up fighting Jeff, and I saw the funniest fight I've ever seen in a game of Warmaster, in that John tried to charge with his Croxagore supported by Saurus, with a Carnosaur. Saurus riding Carnosaur in the unit, and he tried to charge them into a unit of trolls and failed. So their trolls were initiative charged in their turn. They were supported by goblins and had a Wyvern, and the trolls destroyed the Croxagore in one round of combat, and the Croxagore destroyed the trolls in one round of combat. So both armies had ripped the living shit out of each other, in that they'd lost the combat character. I mean, the Wyvern was much more expensive than the Carnosaur, and they've lost one of the units of meat, and all that was left was a unit of goblins staring at a unit of Saurus who were just looking at the heavens saying, where's everybody gone? So that was fantastic. And then my game just relied on my samurai, because I kind of, the hill was in, there was a hill, and it was a very big hill, and it was on their side of the board, so I knew I was going to have to assault a hill. But luckily, samurai are as good as anything for digging out defended, and that's what they did. And so it's the first round of combat's not easy, because you're fighting stuff that's normally got a slight advantage on you because they're defended, you're not. But the samurai kind of, because they've got more attacks base, they can kind of make up for a little bit of that. They've got better armor than the clan rats, so they make up for that. I also did some clever maneuvering around the back with my cavalry to pin, because it's such a massive fucking blob of Skaven. I pinned stuff at the back of the hill to prevent his army retreating, because the combat I fought first was the combat at the front, which pushed everything back into stuff that was pinned and caused them big, like garbage compactor and stuff. Whole units were being crushed and destroyed towards the end of the combat because there was nowhere for them to go, which was cool. So we won that one, and John lost 390, I lost 260, Jeff lost 540, James B lost 475, and we got 16 points, so they got 4 points. So again, I get 8 points, John gets 8 points, and we move on to game three.
Attention! If you need to get your miniatures safely from point A to point B, then get yourself a KR Multicase. KR Multicases come in all manner of different shapes and sizes, and have gamer-friendly pricing. So do yourself a favour and get yourself a KR Multicase today! Soft foam, hard cases. Okay, and so going into our last game, round three, I was partnered with Ian, who had a very heavy Chaos Dwarf army, in that he had gone for all infantry with some chariots, character selection, so it was a lot of heavy infantry. We were against a demon army led by Jim, and a Bretonian army. Now, in this scenario, it was four corners. So we had a 40 by 20 centimeter box in each corner that we were setting up in. And, so we played this scenario before, I remember last year, and it's like, essentially, the armies are so far apart from being able to support each other. It is a bit strange of a scenario, really, I find. Anyway, what happened with me is I had to be able to fend off both people at once. So the Bretonian player made no effort to like go against Ian's chaos and came straight at me with his knights, and the demon player also sent like attacks my way. So I'm at least trying to fend off one and a half players at least, by myself. So what I had to do, I had to play really cagey in this game, really well. So I had a wood to my immediate front, so which I sent my infantry in, and that really undid and slowed down the Bretonian player, as he just didn't realize that, his cavalry just couldn't go in this wood, and they make them so vulnerable to, especially my one unit of crossbow was just shooting out unhindered. Though there was a situation, I didn't check the rules for this later, where because the scenery was a curve, and you need to be within 2 centimeters to fire out. So, and in a formation, it's because that seems like the right thing to be doing. But actually, I could have, to be honest, I could have put the actually playing that again, I would have put the crosswomen in a broken formation curving around the scenery. Anyway, there you go. As long as they can all fire at the same thing, it's fine. But well, my point is, because I had a stand just poking out the scenery just slightly, I would have thought, because the majority is in the city, it would thus couldn't be attacked. But actually what that meant was it could be attacked by cavalry because it's slightly out, but they won't be able to sort of chase me into the woods. So really weird situation. But we did get a ruling, and that was the ruling. So we want to funiculars of War Master, but what that meant was, because I didn't, you know, is that the Bretonian knights who have to charge were thus doing it, you know, like, so a unit was banging themselves into my crossbowmen and against, and just not, and putting one stand, I stand and shoot, and one stand against one stand, and I'm supported. They're never going to win that fight, and it's just like, it was slowed him down immensely, and that gave me the time to send the rest of my force, cavalry, to go and attack the demon player, because, you know, he wasn't going to stop coming at me. And the Bretonians were getting really slowed down by this wood. And yeah, and I managed to fight my, and do get some good combinations there, like a combination charge of, I wiped out two units of chariots and a character, demon chariots with my cold ones, and then threatened the rest of his demon army. Anyway, the game was that essentially decided by the my partner Ian's Chaos engaged the demons. It was a big old scrap, and eventually, like, the Chaos came out on top because they'd also lost some, they'd lost some units from my attacking them. The Bretonian player didn't take much casualties at all because they just failed to engage, getting around this like simple woodblock trick, with infantry. But in this scenario, because I'd gone in, undefeated, like 16-0, I was in the contention for the top place. But with the particulars, I needed to, we needed to win totally. And also, we had to individually take less damage than anybody else who was in the top spots that would, like, decide the top placings. Anyway, so this game finished, and again, another 16-0. Because they just did not manage to do much to us in return, because I barely lost anything against the Bretonians, and Ian's Chaos had taken back and forths with Jim's demons, who they were scrapping mostly in the wood and then out of it in a big infantry clash, and that ended our round three. So I got three wins for three. Can't complain about that.
So game three, we're playing against James again. James B with his Skaven and Ryan K, who is one of the Scottish chapos. And he was playing Araby. And he had a nice little build. Elephants. He had a couple of archers, a couple of halberdiers, because I think you have to have those. He had three characters, including a djinn, which went with the magic carpets, who did sterling work. A general and some guards and a couple of units of camels, maybe. I don't think he had any knights. He was just relying on the elephants as his shock troops. And I was paired up with a fellow called Graham M, and he was playing Vampire Counts. This was an even stranger. The games were all pitch battle, but the deployment was mixed. So the winners of the scouts picked a pair of alternate corners, so opposite corners, and randomly deployed one of their armies in each corner of the corners. And then the people who lost the scouting did the same with the other two corners. And the deployment zone was 20 centimetres on the short side and 40 centimetres on the long side, which is like a really small box, and it right in the corner. So the guy that was facing opposite you was an enemy on your, like, if you were in the left flank, so you're on the right, far left-hand side, and there's a guy on the far left-hand side of the other side. And you're normally about, 120, 80 away from each other. And the other way, you're 240, so you're 160 away. So you're twice as far away from the enemy on your long side as you are the enemy on the near side. So the kind of game is like a mini game of two games. So two individual fights, if you like. Or what we tried to do and didn't work particularly well is move as quickly as you can to cut off one of the two. So we thought Skaven are renowned for being slow and having difficulty moving because they're kind of capped in the same way as Lizardmen. They can't move stuff. They've got no cavalry. They can't move stuff more than about, I don't know, you could maybe get two orders off, so you could move, you could maybe move 40 or 50 centimetres. It's got to be 40 centimetres, isn't it? Two orders, really. You can't really move much more than about 40 centimetres, I don't think. Especially if you're using big brigades. So it would take them a long time to move the long ways on the table. So what we decided to do is I'd go across the board and attack the Araby player, and Graham would try and move his quite big vampire army down the long flank and engage the Araby player. And the first turn, my guys went absolutely fucking nuts. I don't think I failed an order. So I moved my samurai horse twice, and I moved the first unit of samurai twice, and then I moved the next unit of samurai three times. So that they've moved 60 centimetres nearly. And I'm only 80 centimetres away, so I'm just outside initiative range. And then Ryan pushed up his elephants and put some stuff in a wood and shot some stuff up with his magic carpets, who did really well. I had nothing in my list, realistically, to deal with the magic carpets because they've got eight shots, whether you charge them or they shoot you. And what's likely to happen is they're going to shoot you and then you're going to try and turn around and charge them. And they got terror, and I can only fight them one round, really, because I'm only getting them in the front. And it really wasn't very easy to deal with, so I just kind of ignored them, which did sting over the three or four turns of the game, but there wasn't really anything else I could do about it. But my samurai charged into his elephants on initiative and took them out, and then charged into a wood and took the stuff out in the wood, apart from one unit that was hiding with characters in it. And then we went into what did we have in? We had the guards in a kind of field, but that didn't slow down the samurai because they got more attacks anyway. They got four attacks. It doesn't matter that I'm not getting the charge bonus because I've already got more attacks than you, and I'm not it's not defended, so I'm not rolling fives to hit. So they rolled up the guard, and then we just, over the course of the first three turns, I think we took out his entire army apart from the magic carpets, who we just didn't have anything to deal with. So there was an escape route for his characters, because you could have more than one character in a unit, and we couldn't catch them realistically, so because they're very quick, aren't they? Anyway, while this was going on, I was looking over at the fight between James B and Graham M. Well, I say fight. The problem was that Graham couldn't get any orders off. So there's an interesting bit in the journal that Ollie, one of the German committee members, has written around how to think simply about building brigades and how many characters you need. Because I do build brigades, and I can kind of sense if I've got enough command. On my particular build, I had three combat brigades. I had a general and a hero, which turned out to be perfect for the method that Ollie encourages people to use, which is that a wizard can order half a brigade in effect. A hero, that's a leadership 8 hero, can do one brigade. A wizard at leadership 8 can do one brigade as well, but obviously is a bit more restricted in how far he can push it. Leadership 9 general is 2 brigades, and then leadership 10 general is 3 brigades. I think that's quite a sensible way of looking at it. So then you won't be caught, at least hopelessly, over committed in how much your characters are going to have to do, how many orders they're going to have to make. I think, if I'm being honest, Graham maybe didn't build his brigades properly, and he was trying to order stuff piecemeal, because that's the other thing. It's as easy as to order a whole brigade as it is to order a single unit of flyers. So even if you're, say you've got one unit of flyers, that needs its own dedicated order. So that needs, in effect, it's a brigade, but it's a brigade of one. So if you've got like a, I think he had a massive army, like really, really big. And I know you have to take a lot of junk in the vampire list, but he had dogs, and he did have three black knights, which was the only, and a couple of graveguard maybe. But it was a very, very big army. And I think maybe he had a general. He might have even had two heroes and a necromancer. But it wasn't anywhere near enough stuff to move the amount of stuff he had to move. And by turn three, he'd only really managed to move about halfway down the length of the table with some of the stuff, and most of the stuff hadn't really got very far outside the deployment zone at all, which meant that the Skaven were on them. And once the Skaven get in amongst you in the numbers they had, and unfortunately at this point Graham had split his force because he was trying to send his force down, so he was kind of strung out. That made for very bad times for Graham, for the stuff that got left behind, because they just... The one thing you can't afford to do is engage with Skaven piecemeal, because they're massive blobs, and this massive blob was just like swallowing up vampire counts. Anyway, I managed to knock Ryan out. Well, I didn't knock him out, because the combined break of the Skaven meant that even though he had no army left, he didn't go out, and he still had his general left, and an escape hole in the in the magic carpet. So then I managed to turn and kind of move towards James's Skaven and start to engage them, but we ran out of time. And for some reason, I don't quite know what went on. For some reason, I got given a win, I believe, because I finished fourth, but I don't know how I got that win, or our team got that win, because we didn't... Maybe somebody conceded, I don't know. I didn't hand in the results, but we didn't even win on victory points, let alone on scenario, and nobody was broken. But hey-ho, hey-ho. So the scores on the doors, Graham lost 270, I lost 390, which gives us a team loss of 660. Oh, we did win on the score, just only slightly. James B. Skaven lost nothing, zero. I mean, he was going to start losing stuff when I got into him next turn. And Ryan lost 870, which when you consider there's at least... I mean, there's a djinn and a hero and a wizard. There wasn't much left of the actual fighting rank out of a 1250 army. And as I said, I managed to come fourth somehow. Not sure how. John Beasby won. Good man. He is a top player. Janice was in there. Paul was unbeaten. Ian was unbeaten. Yeah, so it was a good run. There was about six players unbeaten. And, yeah, well done. Well done, John, for winning with your filthy old lizard man. And we'll move on to the last section.
Okay, so the results and social. So, first of all, the results. So basically, there was quite a few players in this, because it's a three-round event, who had gone undefeated. They'd got their 16 nils each round, so there was how do you like level decide them. And in the final round, it was done on how much damage individually we had done to as a team to our opponent, and then that was not decided. It was how little damage we had ourselves had taken, like, you know, the less damage would be better. And anyway, what this meant is that there was quite a few people who had been undefeated. I think the top six had been undefeated in their rounds. But then it was down to the particulars of those win conditions, who would re-rank up first. And the first place actually went to John, the partner I had from the first round. He had gotten a really big result in the last game with his lizards, so done a lot of damage to the opponent, and that took him the first spot. So John took first with Lizardman, a guy called Vince with Vampire Counts took second, and Alex Janaway took Kislev took third. Barry came fourth, and I came fifth with the Dark Elves, and the guy I was partnered with, Ian, took sixth with Chaos, and then respectively going on down. So there wasn't much I could do about, you know, how he wins. So the next win condition from actually winning the games was the most damage you'd done to your opponent as a team. Ultimately, if they haven't got as expensive units, and thus the ones that you can get at to kill, there's a bit of mitigation. You know, it's in like we won our game, but we would have needed to have killed off the most expensive like units that we could find. Well, we weren't thinking about that, and that's not really War Master, because you're not going to be able to pick it. Like, I'll go for the most expensive units because they're probably not in some way you can attack, for example, if they're not being used by our opponents. So yeah, that was a result. I went undefeated and ended up coming fifth overall, and happy with that. The fact that I didn't lose a game, can't ask for more for that. And the 3 and I and three awesome games, you know, like in 30 years, you listen back through to it. And I was just like pretty pleased. I wouldn't change my list. I think I was, essentially I was happy with it. At this event now, it's gone six games undefeated. So why would I change it? It's clearly working in that format. And yeah, it's just the particulars of the format where you'd need more rounds to get an absolute winner overall would be done. And it's like, but that's the beauty of these War Master events is like everybody like wants to run their own one and put their particulars into a tournament, and that's how Jim and Alex want to run their event, and full credit to them, definitely recommend it and would go again, you know, happily. The social involved most of the crowd going for a curry in a downstairs rented area of an Indian that we'd been to before, and much hilarity was ensured, like beer flowed and curry was eaten, pretty standard mark. And then we went back to the King's Head Arms in Saffron Walden, which is the standard pub that we go to, and I brought out Coup and Love Letter, like two simple little games to play afterwards. And again, that was all fun and games, like drinking was done, played those games, and yeah, it's like, and they just make nice little afterthought games like to play, you know, social for that. I might even bring some tonight to dinner tonight, actually, because I'm out for dinner anyway. Can't fault it. That is a great event, and stayed at, like, the only negative of the after social afterwards was the lack of taxis in Saffron Walden. So getting a taxi back to our hotel just simply didn't exist, it didn't seem to be, so we had to walk it back the mile and a half back to the hotel. Oh, well, that's what else you're going to do, like, when that situation, but, like, you know, just walk it out. But yeah, it was good and fantastic stuff. And to say great, I mean, it showed us again, I mean, Barry talking about, it's like, yeah, we've been dabbling in some old world, haven't we, recently, because that's been the flavour of the months. But it's not a patch on War Master. War Master is still a fantastic game. With the current changes that will be coming up with the new committee, and like, new changes of the game, they're minor. Yeah, it's not big stuff, I wouldn't have said, but it's like, it's just refining the edges of things. It's still fantastic. It's still tactically really good. And as I demonstrated in our, you know, my second game of like the strategy involved, like to how to handle the situation, and it must be doing something right if we can pick up wins because we're practice players. And yet you don't need to play it that much to like remember the rule sets, etc. And it's, you know, there's very little book thinking about it, very full rules questions. And apart from my third game, this particular guy hanging out the wood, and it was, yeah, that was a minor thing. So War Master's still great, still keeping our attention, and still plenty more games to play of that. Anyway, that was my little wrap-up. Hope you enjoyed it all.
So finally, talking about the curry and stuff, we had a good laugh in the pub. We had a good laugh in the curry house first. Mogul, is that the right place? Downstairs, we had the whole of the downstairs, which was probably room for about 20-ish. So that was cool, and we just sat there drinking and eating unlimited poppadom and stuff, and it was very nice curry, very nice evening's entertainment. And then we went to the pub, and for some reason, I don't know where this has come from, because this happened when I went to Bruno last year, that people now, when they go to pubs, start getting out fucking card games. It's like, what's wrong with talking? Why couldn't you not just sit around and chat? Why have you got to play these fucking games? So the first game we played is like this June thing. I don't really understand it. It was like a bluffing game, and everybody claimed to be a fucking baron, and then I've got an assassin, and you're basically just trying to knock people out. And if you say, oh, you haven't got a baron, and they do have a baron, then you end up getting knocked out. What? I mean, we played a few rounds of it. It really was quite tedious. I didn't like it at all. And then we played this Love Letters game. And that was better. It was better. I mean, it's a bit of a crappy name, but I understand now that it's a Japanese IP and that it's been ported across. And I can understand how, with the Japanese kind of tradition, how that would be something they would create, this kind of game. Or about passing a letter secretly. That was better, but it still felt really contrived. It's like, what's gone wrong with people just sitting around chatting shit and, like, talking bollocks, drinking? Why have we got to be fucking managed like kids? It's like some fucking soft play. We're going to bring out the fucking card games. I really don't get it. I think it's a generational thing, and I've just missed it. Maybe it's these, what's the ones down from me, millennials. Maybe the people are millennials who I don't know, have to have their fun organised for them. Or Anyway, because we went out for a curry last week and the same thing happened again. After the curry, people were getting out fucking card games. I said, what is going on? It's good. Anyway, so I'm just going to opt out of that in future. We can have a fucking card game table. I just want to play, like, back in my northern upkeep, like upbringing days, we used to play like dominoes and cards and like for money, like. But yeah, it's weird. I don't get that many nights out socialising. I don't want to spend them playing fucking shitty card games. Yeah, because people kind of can't socialise because there's a game going on, so they just sit there and fucking not chat. Anyway, that's enough of a rant from me. I don't want to say it was a bad evening, because it was a good evening. It just felt weird, this fucking contrived game thing. So I'll just have to put my foot down in future and go sit on a different table when they want to play fucking card games. Be a miserable cunt. Anyway, I think next year, Warmaster Melee 3, Triwiz with Saffron Walden, it's 32 players, and I think I signed up this week and it was already on 21. Because Janice gives me a little heads up because I'm not on Facebook very much. So he contacted me, I've already paid up. So I think I was number 21 and it had only been out like 24 hours. So if you do want to go, it's going to be mixed doubles again. You're guaranteed a lot of fun. You're guaranteed to be able to come out for a curry in the evening if you want. And you're guaranteed to get me fucking raging if you try and bring out any more card games. Okay, final section. Just want to thank everybody for getting the way through this fucking episode. I'm sure it's not great. I'm sure I tried to record on just using my phone with standard settings, not using any specialist mics or anything to try and make the comparison between my recording and Paul's recording kind of similar. So, well, hopefully it doesn't sound too mad. I didn't want one to be like pristine audio and the other one to be fucking horrific. So hopefully they're both listenable, if not perfect. And we'll get back to a proper episode next time, which I think it's time to discuss the votes, which I did the admin for yesterday. So the votes are all closed now. We know what's gone, what's passed and what hasn't passed, and then we can get on to launching them. If you want to get in touch with us, you can do so at warmaster.podcast@gmail.com or search Paul up on Facebook, or you can Facebook the Warmaster Podcast Facebook page group thing, and eventually I'll see it. Or you can hit me up on YouTube on a comment. I think there's no private channels on YouTube. You can just, all you can do is comment. But I tend to look at those relatively frequently. And we'll see you next time with the big one. The big one. We'll try and get Chris Orr on this. And so we might have to do it Zoom styly. Okay. So until next time.
Would you like to know more?